Yo, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Forbidden Technique Podcast with your boys, Christian and Silas. This week is coming off of UFC 300, one of those events that, for cynical and jaded combat sports fans, reminds you why you love this shit, reminds you why you get excited for big events. An event that was truly stacked from beginning to end, pretty much every fight meaningful and exciting in its own way, and with one truly sport-defining moment. So, Christian, let's just get these two fights out of the way so you can do your victory laps.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about it.
You should.
Alex Pereira fucking dusted Jamal Hill because Jamal Hill can't keep his feet in good position to save his fucking life. He did a really cool moment. It was two sport-defining moments because, honestly, if Max hadn't done that, Pereira dusting Jamal Hill after, like, hold my beer ref and then like killing a guy, that shit was tight as fuck, and that's going to be played forever. He literally, within a 3-second clip, fucking blocks the ref off and is like, motherfucker, I have nuts of steel. It doesn't break eye contact with Jamal Hill, steps in, fucking kills him with a left hook as Jamal Hill's thinking to go straight or something. It's a weird thing with Hill where his feet don't really tell you what he's about to try with his punches, which is not a good thing always. You know, if you're really good at disguising it, then that's interesting. But him, it's just because his feet are in bad position. So he's fucking, he just wasn't ready to eat a left hook, and it's Alex Pereira, so he got unconscious. Really not much to say about it.
No, one of those real fucking Occam's razor fights where it's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure Alex Pereira should just knock out Jamal Hill easily whenever he wants.
The only caveat I had is Hill has a crazy chin, but it just doesn't matter.
Yeah, and it's just never that simple, and you start overthinking it, and you want to give the guy credit because he's, like, good.
He's like an elite lightweight or like heavyweight, you know?
And then Alex Pereira just easily fucking wiped him out with basically the first punch he, like, actually committed to. It was, like, 3 minutes into the fight or something.
Yeah, he just jabbed his body a bunch. Like, he kept, like, slipping a little bit with his head and, like, popping a body jab. He was body jabbing off the hand fight. He was just doing, like, some sneaky jabs to get his hands low and then very easily knocked him out the first time he tried something. It's like he programmed him pretty comfortably. It's like watching someone experienced with something trying to, like, just kind of toy with someone much worse. Normally you don't see that in elite level fights, even if it seems like that should be what happens. But this one, it was just like the most predictable shit. World.
Yeah, just like a 3 minute feeling out process.
He didn't even leg kick him very much.
Where Pereira just set Jamal Hill up for a kill shot. It was basically the Sean Strickland fight again. And like you say, has the fucking, what will go down as a classic timeless moment in MMA where he gets kicked in the nuts and Herb goes in to step in and Alex Pereira's just like, hold up, ref, let me cook, and just goes up and fucking kills the guy.
And what's crazy is I don't think it's a coincidence that shot knocked him out. I think he was like, oh, I see a left hook, ref, 1 second. I'm chill. And then also his little thing where he's like pointing at the ground after he knocked him out. He doesn't normally physically taunt like that after he knocks one out, but that was pretty fucking cool. And Jamal was talking shit. He like showed breaking the bow and all that. That was lame.
Yeah, and we know about Alex Pereira that he is a stone cold hater. Like when he knocked Israel Adesanya out the first time, he was like getting in his face while Israel was fucking astral traveling.
Yeah, he is so fucking vindictive and bitter, despite having all of the success in the world. It's really funny. But technically there isn't much to say about the fight other than, in hindsight, I should have just said Hill's going to get knocked out the first time he gets put on the cage, because he has absolutely no way to push Pereira back. He's not intimidating enough coming forward, and the counter threat's always there. And Hill's chin, I kind of think, is only good on the front foot. Because every time I've seen him put on the back foot is when his chin looks, like, vulnerable. Anytime I've seen him, like, actually hurt, it's him moving backwards a little bit.
And he's just never fought as, like, sharp, quick, and accurate a puncher as Alex Pereira before.
No. And also, a thing that was worrying me going into the fight is Pereira looked kind of shitty to me when I rewatched Prochaska. But Jiri's annoying to fight. Is now my thought on that. He was fighting a guy that's just really fucking weird. And then when he fought a guy that is traditionally bad instead of interestingly bad, then it was just very easy for him.
Well, and Jiri is a big blitzer who's always bounding across space, and Alex Pereira is vulnerable to just, like, show him something, get him to hop back, and, like, catch him on his exit.
Whereas Jamal and Hill, we'll talk about it later, too. Like, Brahaska is just, he's an interesting guy.
He's that guy. But whereas Jamal Hill, two plotting, two stationary, Alex Pereira just got to dictate.
Unwilling to grapple.
Oh, yeah, and just absolutely refused. Because
Brahaska showed grappling entries, too. Which
Jamal Hill just absolutely refused to grapple because he was like, I'm that guy. I can go and strike with this motherfucker and just win. And he got, like, outclassed and then just fucking Donkey Konged.
Yeah, I don't think it was an embarrassing loss for Hill because
is because of all the shit he was talking and the fact that he refused to even show a takedown.
Yeah, the only embarrassing part is that he didn't even try to fight intelligently. He just fought like a meathead against a guy that's going to fucking kill him. And he honestly didn't even fight like a meathead well. He just fought kind of tepid and anxious because he got body jabbed and probably felt, wow, this guy fucking jabs my body hard. And he just moved back a lot. But overall, not much to say about the fight. It was over in 3 minutes.
He just has a fucking gigantic chip on his shoulder.
He does. He gets really anxious anytime anyone even remotely questions his ability. It just comes off as kind of insecure, and insecurity in a fighter is a surefire way to get knocked out. A bit of a case study in just believing in yourself is really important for fighting, because it's someone that is like jawing about how much they have self-belief. They might actually believe it, but they also just get knocked out if they fight a guy that believes in himself but has good footwork or even just good footing. Believing in yourself is a lot worse for your fighting ability than having a nice left hook and tight mechanics.
Yeah, so I would be perfectly fine with seeing Pereira just turn around and make a sort of routine title defense against Magomed Ankalaev. But the big one everyone's talking about is Tom Aspinall, which is funny to me because no one has even mentioned John Jones, because it's just assumed that John Jones, A, would never fucking take that fight, even though he'd probably win it. And B, I guess everyone just accepts that Tom Aspinall is the actual heavyweight champion now, and I would be perfectly fine with strip John Jones, make Tom Aspinall versus Alex Pereira for the actual UFC championship. You should not be allowed to defend interim championships because that means the champion has just been out for too fucking long.
Yeah, and also I think it's a cute idea, but I think Aspinall fucking kills Pereira super easily. I think it's like a 90-10 split ratio. Aspinall just subs him, because Aspinall is not dumb. He's gonna be like, oh god, I need to duck under one left hook and take him down or else I'm dead. Or not even dead, he's just gonna be like, I'll jab him once and then shoot for a takedown. And he's huge and has good submissions, and Pereira is bad on bottom despite how much people proclaim that he's actually kind of good at jiu-jitsu. Fucking whatever, he got his black belt for knocking out Jamal Hill in a fight where he didn't grapple.
Fuck it, give him his black belt. Why not?
I honestly only think they even gave him a black belt because he beat Izzy to black belt. Because Izzy's like a blue belt right now or some shit. Because his coaches are actually being like, they're being honest about it. Like, hey, you're like a blue belt. You're a pretty good blue belt. But Pereira's like, eh, you can knock out anyone. Doesn't give a shit if they can do jiu-jitsu. I guess you're a black belt.
So anyway, Weili Zhang mostly wiped the floor with Zhao and Yan, as was to be expected, but Yan was in there, had some moments, did a much better job.
She submitted her completely unconscious, and no matter what any other motherfucker says, I fully am on board with, if someone is unconscious through any means, then the fight is over. It does not matter if the round ends.
Yeah, I think if someone has to take that minute between rounds to regain consciousness, the fight should have been done. You shouldn't let someone do that. And that was a really bad call. But was Jason Herzog reffing this? Because that is,
and he's actually defending it, like the stance on letting it go as well. I think under the grounds that she maintained herself for the next few rounds. But really, I just think like,
okay, but you can't judge these things retroactively based on that. You should have stopped the fight when she was fucking stumbling around, barely able to get to her feet because she got choked completely unconscious at the end of the first round.
Yeah, and that's. It's unfair to Weili because we don't know how much energy she expended doing that, and then she looked kind of bad for the rest of the fight because you can get an adrenaline dump when you like have a sub in and you get them out. Because she was squeezing that shit, and she worked a lot in that round just to be in the position to get the choke, you know? So that was bullshit. Zhang only, and also Zhang was saying after the fact that she felt like she was dreaming, like she didn't really remember the fight. Like after she got hit with one of the shots, it was just weird. So Wei Li ended up taking more brain damage than she had to, and same with Yan. Even though she mostly was fine on the feet, she got outlanded, but it didn't really ever seem dangerous for Yan on the feet to me. Zhang is not a striker anymore. She is a grappler that will strike with you, I think.
Yeah, and Yan is a dangerous matchup for her for as long as it is on the feet, because she's really annoying
to box with.
Yeah, she's like pretty responsible with her positioning and has good intercepting counters. It's just the fact that she had to bank on knocking Wei Li the fuck out with one of those single moments because she can't consistently defend the wrestling. And so someone really needs to explain to Xiao Nan Yan that good footwork is good footwork, because you see her when she is just in boxing mode. And like I say, she's really responsible with her positioning, keeping herself off the cage, using good lateral movement. And whenever she gets into a spot where there is a really significant threat of a takedown, she just starts fucking panicking and puts herself in worse and worse positions. And it's like being in a good position relative to your opponent kind of is what it is, regardless of what phase of MMA you're focused on. Like, it's harder for someone to get a good takedown entry on you if you're maintaining a good striking distance and constantly taking good angles.
Yeah, if you've got, like, if you're fully to someone's side and you've taken a slick angle, they can't shoot a single leg on you that has any, like, consistency. It was like a staple of Aldo's game, is that he would be just outside of their lead foot and then they would shoot a single leg and he would just shrug them off limp leg because he gave them a bad bite on the leg.
Yeah, but as we've seen, this is just still something that Zhao Nan Yan is just still developing as a defensive wrestler and grappler, and has obviously made a pretty significant stride since she got absolutely mopped by Carla Esparza. But there's still just a disconnect and a discomfort in that moment where someone presses a takedown advantage that makes her footwork fall apart.
Yeah, this is an analysis, but I think that Herzog just did that because he wanted a crazy moment to happen in his fight, like happened before, and he was just jealous that Mark Goddard got the Max fight. But also, apparently, if Mark Goddard was the fucking, or if Herzog was the ref, he would have went the fight to a fucking decision instead of a last second knockout. Because if it doesn't matter, the fight's over, you know, they'll just wake Gaethje up, bring him out for a sixth. I get that it's not the same thing as you got knocked out, but being choked out is fucking disorienting, you know. Yan got a 30 second corner instead of a full minute corner because she was unconscious for the first 30 seconds trying to figure out what the fuck happened. And I maintain that it brought a bad performance out of her because she basically went the rest of the fight knowing she had been finished. And then Wei Li went the rest of the fight knowing that she has finished her opponent before. So it's like hard to motivate yourself to go fuck someone up if you already just won. And then it's hard to motivate yourself to like get angry and go fuck someone up if you know you've been choked unconscious immediately by this person before. So I just think the fight was worse and really fucked up the tone of the card. And it's neither of the fighters' fault at all. I think it was purely like a reffing issue. And I love Herzog. He's normally a magnificent referee. I just think this is a situation of him following the rules in a way that makes him a stickler dork. It was like, oh, well, you know, she woke up within a few seconds. Like, fuck you. She got choked unconscious, you know. And the UFC doesn't have Save by the Bell rules. If you're unconscious at the end of a fight, or at the end of a round, it's supposed to be the fight's over. If you're dazed as fuck and basically out on your feet and then you make it to the next round, that's different. Or if you're about to go out and then you get saved by the bell, that's different. If you are out when the fight ends, and people have brought up like Wei Li holding the choke a little bit longer, who fucking gives a shit? Fucking the fight was over. You know, she had her in a locked in choke and her opponent went unconscious.
It is Whaley's job to fucking hold on to that shit until the ref says otherwise.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times I have to remind people that it is not the fighter's job to listen out for the horn. It is the fucking ref's, and it is the fighter's job to keep fighting until told otherwise.
Exactly. And I'll also hold it against a fighter if they don't adhere to that. I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, you know, you're supposed to keep fighting, but if you hear the horn, stop it. No, like, that's an example of you need to listen to what the fucking rules tell you on that, because you'll get checked. You'll get chin checked. You know, it happens to people. They get chin checked at the end of a round because they fucking drop their hands. And the other guy is just willing to fight.
Yeah, they hear the horn and they're like, oh, the round's over and the ref's not in there. And the other guy's still just going. And then people will give Tony Ferguson shit about hitting Donald Cerrone. It's fucking stupid.
Yeah, so Zhao Nanyan and Weili Zhang got fucked over and had a really... It wasn't even a bad fight. It was actually pretty enjoyable for the most part.
It wasn't a bad fight. It was just in between the two fights. It was in between.
Yeah, so they should have just paced it differently and had that before the fights. Because normally they go by weight, but they were going... They know the BMF is like a silly belt. So.
Yeah, it's just the fact that this was for an actual undisputed MMA title and Holloway versus... I mean, we never even mentioned that it was for the BMF belt because who fucking cares? It was just a badass fight that needed to be booked for 5 rounds and the extra made-up belt on it that originally was only made up to sell non-title pay-per-views in the first place. So there was, you know, it's just the fact that, oh, Justin Gaethje won it in the last one, so it's a thing now. But, I mean, who fucking cares about that? Anyway, let's talk about that fight, Christian.
So, Max Holloway knocked out Justin Gaethje with 1 second left in the fifth round. And the rest of the fight was also Max beating the fucking shit out of Gaethje, with the exception of the fourth round where Gaethje actually got his jab going, because that fucking dipshit loves to jab after the fight's already gone away from him. Or once he's already won cleanly without jabbing, for some fucking reason.
He just only starts jabbing when he's tired.
Yeah, yeah, he starts jabbing as like a defensive tool to slow down the fight, and it always works because he has a ramrod fucking piston that he like claps your nose with. He also jabs at like an angle where it kind of clips off your face. He has a really interesting jab that I actually quite like, and that's why it's annoying that he doesn't use it more, because his jab is very versatile and gets a lot done for him despite being mechanically the same every time, because he always throws the same jab. He doesn't like...
I mean, that's just the jab.
Little tiny jab. What the fuck am I talking about Gaethje?
Why are you talking about Justin Gaethje?
He got beaten the shit out of and read like a book from the get-go. In the first round... At the very end, Max does a jumping spin kick to counter Gaethje's duck, and it hits him right on the nose and cheek and, like, cuts him and breaks his nose. And Gaethje fucking recoils and flies away and almost falls out of the cage door as someone opens it because the round ended.
Like, Max just goes, get the fuck out of my cage, bitch!
If Max hadn't knocked him out in the fifth round, then that moment also would have been sport-defining, but I haven't seen a single motherfucker talk about it. He kicked him out of the cage! It's like, he's like, no, it's my cage, bitch, and fucking spin kicked him in the face.
Yeah, and the jumping spin kick from Max took a big return for that move in this fight, which was always one of his favorite moves, and one that it doesn't seem like he's used as much in recent years when he's had a lot more just like boxing-centric performances.
And harder people to spin kick, where he does it a lot less.
Yeah, whereas it's really good against Justin Gaethje because A, he was actually pressuring in the early rounds, and I like the jumping spin back kick because it actually just has a little bit less range than if you fully pivot through on your standing foot. So that means it's a lot better for an intercepting counter when someone's just trying to roll up on you. And it either hits you right in the fucking body, or if you're like Justin Gaethje and constantly duck way down as a defensive reaction to almost anything, then it'll smash the bridge of your fucking nose to pieces and make you go careening out of the fucking octagon.
And there's a third layer of why it's really good opposed to just a standing spinning back kick, in that you jump over any possible cut kicks to try and trip you out whenever you do it, because another counter to someone doing a spin kick is to just follow the arc. But if someone's really good, they'll follow the arc of it and just be behind you and then kick your leg out so that you fall on your ass. But you jump over any potential kick counters, or you can also just time leg kicks with it to kind of like kick someone off balance. And it does disincentivize leg kicks. It's a really weird and awkward way to disincentivize leg kicks. But if any time that you throw a kick, the guy could step in with a left hook or jump over it and spin kick you in the body, it'll turn you off of it a little bit, you know? But Max, he got all of his tools established very early. Gaethje's just incredibly reactive to any threats. And I think he has a very good chin, but he... This is going to sound strange to a lot of people, but Gaethje does not like being hit. Whenever he gets hit, he has a very awkward reaction to it. I think the fact that he doesn't like being hit actually is why he used to be such a marauding brawler. It was out of anxiety. You know, he's in a fight where he thinks the only way to handle the stress and the chaos is to embrace it, which I understand.
Which is fucking smart, to be honest, because there's so many MMA fighters that are like, let me stay really far away at a range where my opponent just gets to set up whatever they want to do.
And I'm not saying at all that Gaethje's scared of being hit. He's obviously not scared of being hit. But he does not like it in a way that Dustin Poirier does not react to shots like that. Max Holloway, if you hit him fucking clean, he does not give a shit. It's not going to turn him off the fight or change the way he's fighting at all. Gaethje, if you land a really good shot on him, he's going to do everything in his power to try and make that not happen again. Even if it ends up lowering his volume quite a bit, because in this fight, his volume wasn't necessarily low relative to some of his other fights, but it was a lot lower than it would be if he was winning the fight. You know, Max was taking away his tools very comfortably. The body shot and the like the body head follow up, which it's just money against Gaethje because he loves to duck a lot, and sometimes you just accidentally chin him if you go for any body shots.
And it's been a really consistent thing against Justin Gaethje to just show him a jab, get him to throw up his high guard, and then just rip the body.
Yeah, it's easy to target his body, and it sets up the head really well, and he slows from body attrition like no other elite brawler I've ever seen.
You know, you add that to the fact that he got his nose fucking obliterated at the end of the third
first round. Yeah, and then a guy's punching him in the stomach over and over, and every
really
time.
Really affected his conditioning down the stretch.
Every time Max punched him in the stomach, Gaethje did a very noticeable outward breath. And that's something Max Holloway is like. He's so fucking good that he'll like read a guy's breathing patterns and shit and like jab their body at the right time. You know, he was just fucking walking Gaethje like a dog. The fourth round though, Gaethje figures a lot of shit out and is like, okay, I just need to jab him more. I need to throw first because Max is in his own way kind of a reactive fighter. He just has better reactions because most of his reactions are counters that are threatening and also strategic adjustments that are very like major.
Yeah, pretty much all of Justin Gaethje's success throughout the fight was when he was able to come forward and push Max Holloway out of the pocket on the end of exchanges, because that is just where Holloway is the most vulnerable. Is sometimes if someone chases him down, he'll just kind of move straight back with his hands in a bad position and get dinged by something.
Yeah, but he likes the old long guard and run backwards.
Yeah, but the thing is that Gaethje, he couldn't do what Dustin Poirier did in terms of repeatedly enforcing that dynamic while actually keeping Max Holloway's pace, and he did not have Dustin Poirier's defense.
Yeah, and Gaethje just has really bad footing a lot of the time. He has like good footwork, theoretically. He just trips up on himself a lot, and he especially does that because of how reactive he is. It's actually something I pointed out with O'Malley and Chito Vera in their first fight, where O'Malley injures himself by having really fucky footing. And like being overly reactive whenever someone's doing something to him, and he'll like Gaethje at one point just completely almost falls in his face when he's about to step in on a pretty wide open opening on Max. Max was moving backwards with his arms out, and Gaethje's about thinking like, I'm gonna shift in with a quick little foot switch, and I'm gonna get in range, and I'm gonna hit blast him. He just falls on his face and has to reset, and Max gets out clean and like circles out and gets back to the center. Max just did so good at stopping any sort of thing Gaethje tried to get going, and then the fourth round, it seems like a combination of Max slowing a little bit and Gaethje pulling out the tools that he needed from the beginning and making some very smart adjustments. It was enough to, you know, get him back into the fight for a little bit.
Dropped Max in the fourth round, first guy to ever do it, even though I don't know how clean of a knockdown you want to call that. I think we've seen Max hurt worse than that, but Justin got some good shots off throughout the fight. He could never... It was kind of like Chito Vera against Sean O'Malley the second time, is that he could never follow up on a good idea and protract it into more success because he just let himself get so far behind.
Yeah, he got beaten the shit out of, where if he had taken away Max's ability to snowball right from the get-go, the fight would have been really competitive, even if Gaethje only took two rounds off him or something, you know? But Gaethje was... he was just overreactive the whole time, and seems like he didn't really study Max's tactics very well, which is a common issue for Gaethje, honestly. He has a lot of fights where he just doesn't seem to do the type of work in camp to know what he should be aiming at for his opponent. Ferguson fight is such an outlier that I'm going to stop using it as a reference point of Gaethje's skill set, because he really is not he's not a very good counter combination fighter. He does it in that one fight, and all of his other fucking fights, it's one-shot counters. Or it's, you know, a 1-2 counter. Like, he'll do a hook and a low kick.
Yeah, the Ferguson fight really just happened at the perfect time.
It did. And it was shot Ferguson. We've learned a lot of context about Ferguson where you could say he just broke Ferguson permanently and that's why he looked so bad after, or you can just assume that it was right as Ferguson was pretty shot.
Yeah, he'd actually kind of looked pretty bad for the few fights before that, and yeah, it was just the right moment for Justin Gaethje to have a performance that just fucking unraveled everything.
Yeah, and something that is very interesting about the fourth round as well is Max was arguably knocked down. I think he was knocked down, but also I thought he was knocked down in the second Dustin fight, but people don't count it as a knockdown because whatever, fucking he like got to a hand real quick. But it was a knockdown, whatever. I don't even count that as like an important distinction because he was obviously less hurt by that than he was by a different shot Gaethje hit him with in the same round right before it. So, but Max probably won that round too. Like it felt like Gaethje won it, but I watched the round after, like the next day. I was like, yeah, Max still has a pretty good argument for winning that round because he beat the fucking shit out of Gaethje and hurt him more than he had hurt Max. But Gaethje just had any success at all, and it made it feel like he had gotten a lot more done. If you go from getting almost 10-8ed three times in a row, or at least so widely beaten that there's no argument that you have the round, to having an argument for winning the round, it's going to seem like a huge change.
But then, yeah, fifth round, Max just gets back to fucking torching Gaethje. Like,
the combination, I think Gaethje used the last of his energy to try and win in the fourth round. Everything I thought Max would have, like, a complete checkmate over Gaethje on, he did. Which is why I love Max Holloway, because normally, if I expect that he'll, like, key in on a super fucking open opening, he'll go for it every time. Like, the duck being a spinning back kick, I didn't think Max was going to be like, oh, yeah, let me just use one of my main tools, or what, like, a staple in my striking arsenal to counter this duck. I thought he was just going to fucking use a different one. I thought he was going to uppercut him or knee him.
I mean, he hurts Justin Gaethje with an uppercut left hook,
yeah.
Similar to the one that he dropped Volk with in, the first, like, couple of minutes of the fight.
Yep. A staple of Max Holloway's game is if you duck and or slip out the side after ducking, he's going to uppercut you as you duck and then left hook you as you slip out the other side. He is a really fucking good counterpuncher, and he showed that in this fight. The fifth round starts with Max Holloway actually hurting Gaethje really fucking bad. Like, the worst he had hurt him so far, and he does a classic Max swarm.
Yeah, nearly fucking polishes him off against the cage with, like, a 20-punch combination.
And Max's feet are really... they're really interesting when he starts it, because he does, like, a weird foot shuffle that looks kinda klutzy, but it gets his hands in the perfect position. That's an example of abandoning traditional footwork principles to get a nice shot off, because he does a weird shuffle just to hide that he wants to do a right straight to the body and then a right straight to the head. So he shows like a 1-2 to the body and then just goes 1-2 to the head real fucking quick, and it claps Gaethje, because Gaethje always likes to lean back and have his head behind his feet if you go at him and start coming towards him. So Max just getting that extra bit of range by leaning forward over his feet, perfect in that situation. Makes complete sense, because Gaethje's not really much of a counter threat in that spot. Gaethje decides if he's going to counter before the first layer. After the first layer, you can go wherever you want. And that's something Max keyed in on, at least from the second round. I think he had an idea of it in the first round, just didn't really know how to get to it. But in the second through fifth, he just fucking knew that I have this opening on Gaethje because I got the reaction out of him. And that's all you got to do. You got to bait out the counters and then know that, okay, the counter's gone, going to fuck him up. And then he goes up, he rips him with some of the most hard punches I've ever seen Max Holloway land, because he looked like a fucking real hitter at 155. Like, it was crazy seeing him look like maybe like not in the bottom five of the top 10 for hitters. He hits harder than Armin Sarukian, I think.
Oh, you know? Easily. I mean, I think, you know, it's one of those things. Yeah, maybe Armin Sarukian hits the Ford Escort machine harder than Max Holloway. But in terms of the...
in practice, like, Max Holloway hits hard as shit.
Yeah, in terms of the actual shots that Max Holloway can set up on an opponent, he was fucking putting Justin on chicken legs multiple times every round. And I do think Gaethje's chin has taken a knock. I mean, look at the guy's fucking career. He's 35. He's had the fucking insane action fighter brawler career that he's had. There's no way that wasn't going to happen. He's been getting hurt routinely in every single fight since the Donald. You know, he even got dropped by the fucking distant memory of Tony Ferguson.
I don't think it's hyperbolic at all to say that Max is the best fighter Gaethje's ever fought, or striker Gaethje's ever fought, because you know, Gaethje fought Dustin Poirier, who's beaten Max, but Max in a vacuum, I think he's harder to fight than Dustin is, when it comes to like not getting the fucking shit beaten out of you from the beginning of the fight into the end. You know, Dustin is he's a magnificent striker. Yes, it's a style thing. Like, Max is a lot harder to fight for Gaethje than Dustin is.
Yes.
Despite Dustin having, like, a better matchup over Max, you know. But, so then the moment you've all been fucking waiting for, the fifth round, at the very end of the fight, Gaethje whiffs the stupidest fucking front flip kick, and Max is, like, 10 feet away from him by the time that Gaethje hits the floor. And, you know, keep in mind, Gaethje is already horribly concussed this round. Max is up three, arguably four rounds, with some of them being 10-8s.
Oh, fifth round was already a 10-8.
Yeah, fifth round's already Max winning the widest of any round he had won before. Because Gaethje got, like, no success for the most part. He got a couple leg kicks and, like, a jab or two. But Max was steaming him from the beginning. He hurt him with a left hook in the first round, and it fucking spun Gaethje's head around. Then Gaethje does a stupid fucking front flip. He lands a leg kick that Joe Rogan says has destroyed Max's leg irreparably. Then Max Holloway calls.
Always say that.
Yeah, yeah. Max switched his stance like he always does after Gaethje landed a single low kick, and he's like, "Oh, it's cooked. It's gone forever." Max proceeds to fucking comfortably and athletically jog to the center of the octagon to say, "Let's fucking go, bitch!" And then they start fucking brawling. He's like, "No, we're going." And then they start brawling again. Gaethje's feet are all the fuck over the place because he is, one, concussed as shit, and two, not as good of a pocket brawler as Max Holloway is, because Max will take good foot position during a sequence, whereas Gaethje mostly just keeps his feet in position or comes forward whenever he's coming in. So Max kind of parries him off to the side a little bit, and Gaethje goes for a collar tie, but by the time he gets the collar tie kind of close, Max has already taken a sick angle. He goes right hook to the body, left hook to the body, right overhand to the head. The right hand spins his head around, knocks him fucking horribly unconscious, face plants onto his face instantly. Max jumps over his body, goes and hangs out with his hot wife, and his corner goes crazy. It was the most fucking electric moment I've ever watched in combat sports, and I'm not exaggerating.
This is the fucking stuff of legends, and this is why we've always loved Max Holloway, because he's a guy
who goes for it.
He will be up so cleanly, and he'll just do, like, stupid flexes. Like, you know, we always remember the shit from the fifth round against Calvin Kattar, which was him just, like, fucking around because he got tired beating the fuck out of Calvin Kattar. An underrated one for me is the one where he corrects Brian Ortega's guard while he's beating the fuck out of him, and hits him on the guard and goes, "Oh, way to go, you blocked one." And then goes back to beating the fuck out of him.
Teaches him a defensive reaction that he can exploit, which is really funny. Yeah.
And, like, this was, like, the fucking Ricardo Lamas fight, where he's up cleanly and just goes, "Fuck it, let's go," points to the middle of the octagon and just stands there and goes fucking rock 'em, sock 'em, robot. Except this time he smokes Justin Gaethje and puts him fucking into the shadow realm on his face with a second left in a fight that he was dominating. Just, I've never fucking seen anything like it before and probably never will.
Yeah, Max Holloway is so special as a fighter because he's willing to try a bunch of shit when he's feeling himself. Because, you know, he didn't do the point in the middle of the octagon fucking swing against Arnold Allen or, you know, Korean Zombie, because Korean Zombie got knocked out before then. But he's able to kind of parse whenever it's a sick situation to do it. Like, against Arnold Allen, it's just a routine fight where he's beating a good contender. He doesn't need to fucking make a show of it. He's just going to beat his ass.
Yeah, and he still drops Arnold Allen in the last 10 seconds.
Yeah, because Arnold Allen got froggy and was like, "Oh, it's Max Holloway in the last 10 seconds, let's go." And Max is like, "Dude,
You don't want to do that.
You're not important enough to me." Which is, it's not he doesn't mean it insultingly, but I genuinely just think Max is like, "I'm on UFC 300, and I'm up four rounds, and I'm fine. I'm going to fucking kill this dude in the last 10 seconds. And he just fucking starts swinging. And the fact that there's people saying that it wasn't, like, super technically skilled, which, one, who gives a fuck? Probably not the most technically skilled thing. But mechanically, that was a fucking sick sequence. Max kind of, like, leaves his head on a platter the whole time. But Gaethje ducks so low the entire time that Max was really in no danger. He's just trying to get his hands on him to, like, make Gaethje react to things. So he's just throwing shit at him like he's a reflex bag that's moving around too much. And then he keys in on the perfect shot to go for. Body shots. Gaethje goes for a collar tie. He's in a weird position and took a nice angle on him. Gaethje's just completely side on, gets fucking crushed. It is mechanically a fucking gorgeous knockout to look at. And also, it's a big special part about it is that Max Holloway isn't a guy that normally knocks people that hard unconscious. And now he's done it two times in a row.
Hey, apparently he is now.
Yeah. And he's talking about wanting to fight Topuria. Volkanovski is asking Topuria not to fight Max because he's like, oh, I don't want to have to beat Max again. You know, I want to beat the guy that beat me. I don't think Max should go down to 145 because he looked the best I've ever seen him. Like, when it comes to punch power, he's had better performances, I think. This is just the most interesting moment because he looked he didn't look worse than his best performances. He just looked as good as them, I think.
Yeah, weird to me that he would, like, make a clearly more committed move to this weight class for a big fight that could easily line him up for a title shot.
And did, because they want Armin for it, because on merit he gets it, I guess. But Max is in line, you know, if he holds out.
Oh, so I suppose you haven't seen they've already booked Makhachev Poirier.
Yeah, but they want to do Poirier, and then Armin's ranked number one, saying he's going to wait, which, if he waits, and then Max Holloway fights Topuria before then, and then by the time... Like, Sarukian might be fucking himself over by not accepting the fight because they offered him the fight backstage and then he said no. So they were like, okay, we'll do Dustin. Which makes sense that he would deny that. He just beat a fight, you know?
I get it, but it's the UFC lightweight division and it wouldn't take much for someone to just, like, go out and get a big statement-making win that would allow them to leapfrog Armin Sarukian if they did it in a more exciting way, you know?
Yeah, one thing that I do think is a good idea for Max is if he can make 145 comfortably, which, honestly, I don't even worry about it. Max, you know, Max is just gonna always, he's not gonna disappoint me. I don't think he's gonna, like, miss weight by 5 pounds and look like shit against Topuria. I think he's probably gonna look amazing against Topuria win or loss, you know?
It seemed like the 145 cut was already getting kind of hard for him for the last few years, and then he bulks up to fight 155. I guess it's just because he's already stomped everyone at 145 and there was, like, nothing that he could really do. But, yeah, I mean, Topuria's changed his tune now, saying he's down to fight Max Holloway. Who the fuck doesn't want to see that fight?
And that's a big thing, is I think Max wants to fight Topuria specifically because he trusts himself to be able to get back up to 155 and be jacked enough to, like, handle Makhachev. And he has a free title shot at 155 waiting on him. He's got, like, the fucking money in the bank title shot ready. He can just walk into the cage and be like, I'm fighting Makhachev tonight. Fuck you, Poirier. And they'll be like, okay, shit. I mean, you knocked out Gaethje in the funniest way ever. That anyone's ever done it. So, yeah, you get a title shot, sure.
Which, much as I love Dustin Poirier, would rather see Max Holloway or Armin Sarukian get that shot right now.
Yeah, and Max just beat a better fighter than Dustin did to get a title shot. And also, Gaethje just knocked out Poirier. So, it's a weird thing where Max has less time at the weight and has less of a resume at 155, but his recent resume is definitely more deserving of a title shot. I mean, he's the best. He's the easily top three best fighters at featherweight, which is insane to me that he might be the third best. And he's also just knocked out the like number one or two contender at 155, and a guy that's been there for years.
Styles make fights. Would you be surprised, despite everything that's happened up to this point, if Max Holloway fucking styled on Ilya Topuria?
I would not be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if Topuria knocks out Max Holloway. He's the first guy to knock him out. I wouldn't be surprised if Max makes Topuria look like he's never fought before. Because Topuria has similar issues to Gaethje, and he's a bit too reactive. I saw Topuria hone in on that and say, oh yeah, Max is cooking him. Like, Gaethje's just reacting to everything. Which, it's easier to say that about someone and then, like, than it is to not have that happen to you. Especially as a fighter who's so prone to just popping up a high guard and coming back with a couple punch counter, and a guy that's really good at coming forward, but he's not the type of guy at getting you on the fence that Max Holloway has problems with in, like, a Dustin Poirier sense. Like, Poirier is good at getting someone on the fence, but Volkanovski has a vulnerability to getting put in there, where if you just stand your ground in front of him and he throws a kick, he'll move backwards. And if you just keep following up the combination, he's not really going to try and put you off of it. But, you know, would you be surprised if the exact same sequence happened that finished Volkanovski and Max either ate the shot and didn't give a shit, or he, like, hurt Topuria with a counter as he was coming in? I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Holloway's just, he's a lot harder to put in that kind of position than Volk is.
Way harder to put that in that position. He has a lot different physical attributes, and Max is a really good head kicker, and we've seen Topuria struggle with people that are longer with nice kicks. So Max might just be like, yeah, I'm a fucking teeper today. I'm just going to fucking show teeps and knees and one twos and, you know, like stab the lead leg with like side kicks and teeps. The spinning back kick is there for Topuria because Topuria likes to step in with a big overhand, and Max loves to spin around and eat a punch on his back to kick you in the body.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk more about it when it gets made, yeah, but you're absolutely right.
There's a lot of shit that both guys have they can capitalize on. It seems like an all-violence matchup to me.
If you're a guy who got almost smoked and kind of dog-walked in moments against Jai Herbert, then... Yeah, don't want to be pulling that shit against Max Holloway. Yeah,
it's a real let's see how much better you've gotten in 3 years type fight. Like, because I believe in him. I think Topuria is him. You know, I think he is on the level of Max and Volk right now. I'm thinking about it even off this performance because, you know, even with all this extra mass, I don't think Max is going to be the same type of hitter going back down.
Nah, dude, you saw Topuria's face when Gaethje went down. He's shook.
I think it was just him thinking about, fuck, I wasn't thinking I had to fight Max Holloway next, because he had been saying he doesn't really want to fight Max next. He wants to go up and fight Islam, or he wants to, you know, rematch Volk and knock him out or something. Or, like, he wants something other than that. But
or he wants to fight Conor McGregor at 200 pounds.
Yeah. He wants to do some money shit because he just got the belt. But now it seemed like it was just him being humbled and be like, oh, fuck, I got to fight Max Holloway next. Shit. Which, that's a good reaction. I'm sure Dustin Poirier's reaction to fighting Max Holloway the second time was, oh, fuck, I got to fight Max. Shit. Because that's everyone's reaction. Fucking Volkanovski coming off his second fight where he got a win over him. He's like, oh, my God, I got to fight this fucking guy again. He's so fucking good. Like, Volkanovski's been bald for a while, but his, like, hair is never coming back after the stress of those Max fights. So, then, there was, like, a rest of a card, whatever.
Armin Sarukian defeated Charles Oliveira, just about.
Oh, yeah. Pretty impressively, I thought. Not, like, impressive, but, like, I don't know. He managed to not be finished, and he made it to a decision with Charles, which is an accomplishment in and of itself.
It is. I thought Charles looked kind of bad.
I do too. I didn't think he looked horrible. Like, I've seen him look worse, but he got feldered a little bit.
I didn't think he looked useless. He just let Armin Sarukian take the front foot and dictate. It didn't seem like Armin was really doing a tremendous amount to dissuade Charles from pressuring. I guess it was.
I think getting a nice guillotine ruined the fight for Charles because he's very much a momentum guy. And if he thinks that he's got you checkmated and then he doesn't finish you, he always looks worse for the next round. And Sarukian just kept giving Charles enough of a noose to hang himself with, I think, like to get him to a decision. He fought the perfect fight to take Charles to a decision.
Yeah, and still was a reasonable argument for Charles Oliveira winning this fight. I'm not going to get mad about it or anything.
Yeah, but in a Frankie Edgar fight sense, yeah.
He very cleanly won the first round, in my opinion, and I'm pretty sure on all of the judges' scorecards. Just, you know, he drops Sarukian with the low kick, gets in on the guillotine. Guillotine was pretty fucking close and probably would have worked on anyone who isn't Armin Sarukian.
And also, people have pointed out, and we noticed in the moment, he fucking pantses Sarukian with the guillotine, and that slides Charles' legs off so that he doesn't have the hips controlled as much with his legs. So by getting pantsed, he actually gets a bit of wiggle room out of the choke, and that's hilarious, because his face is like turning purple and shit, and he's like sputtering out of his mouth, and then he gets out of the choke because Charles doesn't have as much hip pressure to dig in because he loses the body triangle. And then in the third round he goes for a Darce or Anaconda. I haven't seen the other side angle. I've just seen the one that people keep showing because they're like, oh, Armin goes out. He doesn't go out. He drops to a shoulder to like alleviate pressure. But
yeah, he drops to his tummy because you can't fucking get Anaconda choked if you're flat on your tummy.
He doesn't fall limp. He drops.
It was pretty bad optics, and it would have been real fucking hilarious if this fight got Robbie Lawler, Ben Askrand because of it.
It would have had to been like a bad ref decision. Because hold on, who was the
yeah, like that's never fucking happened.
Yeah. I mean, it happens all the fucking time. The fight should have been five rounds too.
It should have been. It totally got fucked over by being on this card, and this card was stacked enough. And this really should have been a five round co-main event for the big Brazil card coming up.
Yeah, I agree. It would have made more sense, but
and we would have actually got to see Charles Oliveira in a fourth round. Which, who the fuck knows?
It would be the first time I've ever seen him in a fourth round, which is crazy that a guy with almost 50 fights hasn't had a fucking fourth round.
But yeah, I'm just going to stop picking Charles Oliveira against good top position grapplers because he's a fucking goofy goober, and I need to accept this about the man that I love.
I'm going to stop picking him in them now. Or I'll still probably pick him, but I'm going to stop like expecting him to navigate it now, because I think he looked a little slower in transitions than he traditionally does. I think he's just a little, he's showing age, you know, which is always going to happen. I think he's been showing age during his title reign, you know?
Yeah, he's what, like 34, 35 now, and has been in the UFC since he was like a teenager and has had a pretty fucking wild and wacky career. It's not like he looked like dog shit or anything. And I'm saying I'm going to stop picking him against grapplers. You know, he lost to fucking Islam and then barely lost to Armin Sarukian. What's he going to turn around and fight fucking Gamrot now? I'm not going to pick Gamrot to beat Charles Oliveira.
Yeah, I'm not going to pick someone that's spindly and like their submissions come from their merit as a grappler rather than fucking someone up on the feet first.
And who lets everyone up that they get a good position on.
Yeah, yeah, and Charles is really good at sweeping and stuff. Like, that fight will probably just be a shitload of scrambling if it happens.
Or it'll just be Charles easily knocking Gamrot out. That's what was supposed to happen this time around, and it didn't, so...
Yeah, Sarukian is... I think he's just a smart enough fighter to where he's not going to give Charles those opportunities. He's a real neutralizer's neutralizer in a lot of ways. If he has a matchup that affords him more wiggle room, he'll take it to you and try and get you out of there. But if it's a fight where he can win, or at least take it to a decision and have a very good argument for winning just by being in top guard and punching you a good bit. Like, I think that, you know, theoretically I'm a fan of Charles sense, you could argue he won the fight, but his biggest damage was submissions, and those aren't damage, you know? It was just he got some good submission attempts in that didn't actually finish the fight, so whatever.
You can argue that Charles has a case for winning purely based on, like, a really pedantic interpretation of the rule set, but absolutely the biggest damage that happened in the fight were the elbows that Armin Sarukian landed from top in the second round that cut Charles up.
Charles Oliveira, I think...
I don't have an issue with Armin winning it or anything, it's just it wasn't like he fucking outclassed Charles Oliveira and made him look like a dumb idiot that doesn't know how to fight like Islam Makhachev did.
I think Charles has a problem with elbows. Like, if you hit him in the face with an elbow, I think he got it like a bit of a reminder of the Felder fight. Because most people don't go for elbows on him, because Max is really good at stopping you from doing elbows on him. Like, ironically. But yeah, that's most of what there is to say about the fight. Technically, not too much happened. It was a lot of just Charles on bottom trying to do stand-ups that... Or not even like trying to do stand-ups, really. That was the issue, is he would try them, and then it wouldn't work, and then he'd give up on it for most of the round and be like, yeah, I'll just get him back on the feet. Charles even defends a takedown at one point really easily, and then just fucking puts himself in an awful position to get taken down again. It's like a structural issue with his style, is that he is good at defending takedowns if he is trying to defend a takedown, but he's so unused to it that if he needs to start doing it because it's actually a route to losing in the fight of getting put on his back and stalled, he just doesn't have the ancillary tool set to keep him on the feet. Because so much of his game is funneling you into shooting a bad takedown so he can submit you. But if you're not going to shoot a bad takedown, even if he's beating you up, then he started looking anxious about the takedown, which is normally not something we ever get to see about Charles. He normally fights pretty haphazardly and isn't worried about getting taken down, and then can still either stuff the shot and get a good position or submit you or at least end in guard, but it just wasn't enough for him in this fight.
Yeah, so, and this was the thing that we saw in the Makhachev fight, is that Charles is a guy who, if his whole game is clicking, he looks like the greatest fighter that has ever lived, because he gets to strike with the confidence that if shit gets a little hairy, or if they just end up in a clinch situation, then he can fuck you up there, he can fuck you up on the ground, he can submit you if you take a bad shot. If he feels like he has ancillary advantages, then it opens up what he wants to do on the feet so much more.
It was making Charles look like an idiot, but he was really anxious about the takedown at this point.
Yeah, that's just that when you see him actually be threatened in those areas, then the rest of his game can kind of start to break down a little bit.
Yeah, and that's a classic. It's kind of the same thing as like Sugar Ray Robinson getting a little like dog walked in some of his later fights, where like a guy that's such a fucking killer, if he gets his moment, is just tapped in the jaw a few times and walked around a bit. Or in this scenario, if a guy's just laid on and elbowed a few times, it really affects the way that they're trying to like get their game going. Okay, so before that, Bo Nickel got fraud checked in an incredibly dominant victory because Cody Brundage is awkward and has South Carolina magic, where he was just fucking, he was just like moving around all weird, doing his best, like, I'm a guy that's never grappled before fighting a striker in Pride impression. Where he just moved around real weird, switched his stance, like jawed at him, fucking moved his hands around, treated him like he's an idiot. Like, yeah, bitch. Oh, what am I gonna do? I'm gonna do something weird. He just tried to like troll him, I guess, and it kind of worked because Bo Nickel was looking fucking anxious as hell on the feet, and then all of his shots looked really bad relative to how good of a wrestler he is. And there's even a point in the second round where he gets like thrown to the ground hilariously because he just shoots in like a fucking bull and gets matadored. Bo Nickel, I think, also after the fight was saying, you know, hey, I'm only, you know, six fighting in my career, guys, you know, don't try and put me against those big guys anymore. Like all nervously and sheepishly when he's been talking about how he'd like crush Adesanya and shit. I think it was just a fight where he realized, wow, MMA fighters are really fucking strong sometimes. And this is guy's shit. And he annoyed me on the feet. I'm not a good striker yet. I need to fucking cool my jets and get better, which is something that he needed.
I appreciate that Bo Nickel was at least very self-critical about this performance and not just being like, I'm the fucking guy, because like I've said, this guy, he's got a really strong technical base. He's an incredible athlete and clearly has a feel and a talent for how to fight, but he's green as fuck and he is not the kind of MMA prodigy that the UFC seems to either want to make him out to be or just thinks that he already is. But why was this fight put here? There was like six fights that deserved this spot over this, but this was just the next big guy who they've presumably given a pretty generous contract to that they just are going to try and cash in on. He called out Fluffy Hernandez. That is a fucking insult to Fluffy Hernandez, and he's already booked against Roman Dolidze. I think Bo Nickel should fight Brad Tavares.
Yeah, Bo Nickel seemed... he needed a fight that would kind of... not humble him, but like, I guess humble him. Like, just make him realize how fucking good some of the MMA fighters are going to be. Cause I'm sure he was in that moment thinking, wow, I'm like struggling with this guy just cause he's annoying and strong
and
like
an Cody Brundage.
Okay wrestler by MMA standards. And if I fought Kamaev would make me look like I'm a bad wrestler because he's so much more of an MMA fighter than I am.
Also, Kamaev would probably just knock him out on the feet because Bo Nickel's entire striking game is just like wide bounding steps into no setup overthrown right hands.
Anyone that's seen Kamaev's pre-UFC run knows that his striking is actually pretty fucking crisp if you give him a really bad striker that is mostly a grappler but willing to strike with him. Bo Nickel has too many issues with his striking for me to actually criticize them in like any technical way. He's just very green. He needs to build a striking game.
That's all that it is, yeah.
But the thing about his performance against was it Val Woodburn? Yeah, that fight, I think he made him think he's a bit better of a striker than he is, and I also think the UFC thought that because they've probably figured, oh, this super fucking athletic hoss is about to go on like a free fight knockout streak because we're giving him guys that are scared of the takedown, and they're just gonna give themselves a knockout opportunity and get fucking killed. But no, I think what has happened is Bo Nickel got a knockout, was feeling himself, and then instantly fought a guy that's just much better at striking and not scared of him on the feet, and realized that the only danger was actually in the takedown, and it made him look like ass on the feet, and he was terrified to throw anything and just kept shooting bad takedowns, despite being, you know, on credentials like the best wrestler in the UFC ever, or some shit, or one of, whatever. So that fight, he got fraud checked in a dominant victory, which is one of my favorite prospect fights because it's just a funny dynamic. But before that, Jiří Procházka looked the worst I have ever seen him by so much for an entire round, and then was like, you know what? I got to bring out the warrior spirit. I have to change my tactics and strategy. He was probably like in his head reading the Book of Five Rings, because I'm sure he has it committed to memory, and he's like, I must walk through the fire. If I had read the Book of Five Rings more recently, I would pull out a quote of it to be funny, but he just figured out that, oh, this guy that's a really like nice and pretty fucking crisp counterboxer, if you walk in on him recklessly, Just to can't maintain that if you keep walking in on him recklessly and can take all the fucking damage to the chin you want. And he went from looking ass the entire fight, getting shut down on almost every entry, and getting kind of barely any damage off, even when he was having his better moments of the first round, to then just deciding, you know what, anything he hits me with, I'll just stay in the pocket. And it worked. It started getting Rakic to like run away and get anxious, and that allowed him to build some forward momentum and start getting Rakic moving backwards at a faster clip, which is a good way to get Rakic's like feet to fall apart, is to get him constantly moving backwards. And Rakic was having success stopping Jiri from coming forward with nice intercepting counters, or just being strong as shit and not worried about any sort of grappling threat.
Yeah, I will say, we were extremely dismissive of Alexander Rakic in this fight. And in the end, I think we were kind of right for the wrong reasons, because yeah. I thought Rakic actually looked pretty good in the first round.
I thought he looked fantastic. He looked like the best he's ever looked on the feet.
He really did. It was all 1-2s and low kicks, but they were well-timed.
He looked like Frankie Edgar, which is what people have been advertising him as.
For as long as he was able to, he was keeping himself in good positions, you know, getting the low kicks in at range, and then getting Jiri to just surge forward into a crisp intercepting 1-2 counter.
There was also an elbow counter that looked like it would have knocked out God, but somehow it didn't even wobble Prochazka. It seemed to only anger him. He also got hurt like really fast against Rakic. Like, Rakic fucked him up with a leg kick early, and I think that changed his approach for the rest of the fight.
I think it was that, but it was also him being like, oh, wow, I got, like, horribly smoked going for a really reckless blitz in my last fight, which is also what happened in his other KO loss way back in the day to King Mo. So he was trying to have, like, a more, you know, disciplined, ranged striking performance, and it's like, bro, this guy is kind of faster than you, and you have no defense, and he was kind of just getting tooled until he just realized he had to go hog wild and just bring out classic Jiri, and he won. Like, it looked so easy. Like, kind of dings him with a glancing head kick, and then throws a big 1-2 that Rakic tries to counter with a left hook, but he gets Masvidal'd and gets put on skates, and once Jiri's landed that kind of shot on you, you're fucking cooked. He has, like, so much killer instinct.
I think Jiri just needs to... He needed to be reminded that his chin is still insane. He just fought Pereira. Because Pereira hits him with a lot lighter of a shot, in theory, than the shot that he ate from Rakic. But he had his feet under him when he ate that disgusting elbow from Rakic, which was probably the hardest impacting shot of the entire night. But his feet were under him, and he saw it coming. So he was like, oh, I'm about to get it by an elbow. Ugh! And then he's like, okay, I'm still in. Let's go, bitch. Whereas every other person that got knocked out horrifically on the night did not know they were about to get hit.
Also, the actual finish on the ground was preceded by, like, one of the funniest fucking takedowns I've ever seen. Where, like, Rakic just
real good.
Yeah, because Rakic is, like, so out of position because he's been wobbled and is, like, trying to get away, but his feet are just all over the place, and he's just like kind of stumbling away, just kind of like grabs his waist and just like throws him to the ground. There's no way I can describe it that does it justice. It was fucking awesome.
There's something about Jiri that I find so interesting, is that people will insult him and act like he's a very low level, low skill fighter. And yet I never hear anyone argue against me saying that he's one of the best looking fighters you'll ever see if he gets his moment. Like, if you just watch his highlight reel, we've said it before, if you just watch his highlights, he looks like fucking Giorgio Petrosian. He looks like the best striker you've ever seen. You'd think, how is this guy ever lost? He knocks people out so cool. He looks like he doesn't even get hit in most of his finishing sequences, is the big thing, because he has a fucking awful defense. But for some reason, every time he does one little slip, it's enough to snowball him to win the fight, like almost without fail.
He is one of the highest evolutions of doing something wrong for the right reason.
Yeah, and it's disingenuous to act like he's a low-skill fighter when he very clearly is thoughtful. He's just insane. Because I've seen people confuse him for being dumb. I think he's playfully dumb, but I think, you know, like, he's not a type of person that doesn't know how to boil water, you know? Like, he's a smart enough guy to where he can figure out things that are working. He made reasonable adjustments in the Rakic fight, mostly with his, like, timing and entries, and his positioning that they're kind of subtle, and I don't think he was thinking about them consciously. He just kind of knows how to figure out what different positions to put himself in to try and get more reliable successes. And he's also a fighter who is always going to remember at some point, yes, this guy is making it dangerous to enter, but I'm a lot more dangerous when I'm entering.
And as you say, the biggest and most important adjustment that won him the fight was to just keep chasing Rakic back after every exchange, not let him land his shot and then reset and get back to a good foot position.
And also, I think the biggest thing that lost him the Pereira fight wasn't even getting hit by that shot. It was that he shot a double leg after, because Jiří likes to take down when he's hurt instead of clinch up. Clinching up against Pereira is a bad idea because Pereira is just a bad matchup in that regard. If he hurts you, he's probably going to finish you. But I think if Prochazka was the type of guy that's going to fall to his back off the takedown, he could have like neutralized the ground and pound or something. I don't think Pereira had him dead to rights off of the counterpunch. I think it was mostly the elbows that took him out of it and fucked up his equilibrium. Because people always mention that he got right hook, left hooked, but they never mentioned that it took like 17 elbows to the fucking ear to actually finish him. And then he woke up instantly. He didn't, like, go out. His chin is ridiculous. And his recovery is even better than his chin, is the big thing. So I don't even think that the Pereira fight's unwinnable for him. I think Prochazka's maybe, like, the worst matchup for Pereira, because everyone else has just so many things that people will say, like, oh, Rakic could take him down. Oh, you know, Ankalaev could take him down. Yeah, maybe. Or they'll get leg kicked like twice and then strike with him for like 10 seconds too long, or take him down and then not finish him in the next round because the guy's tough as shit. You know, it doesn't matter if you're kind of a bad grappler. He's trained grappling a lot. He's really strong. He's as big as any other guy in the division. And there's not many submission artists at the top of 205. Most of them are like top control guys, or not most are top control guys, but any of the grapplers are just guys that'll sit on top or maybe hurt you and then submit you if you're really hurt. But like, I don't know, Anthony Smith would just get fucking leg kicked TKO'd or knocked out horribly before he could get anything done at the grappling. That's how I expect most of the grapplers that would fight Pereira would be until he goes up to heavyweight, and then I think basically anyone that tries to grapple him will finish him. So like, Prochazka didn't do anything wrong in that fight. I think he was actually fighting a pretty good fight for himself. It just didn't work out. So I wouldn't mind seeing that as the next fight if for some reason they don't do the Aspinall fight. And Rakic should fight fucking someone good, because he looked really good. It's weird. I think his stock went up for me, even though he got his ass beat.
Me too. Probably fight Nicky Krill, something like that.
Also, his footing looked so much better than it has previously. I really think he knew that the reason he looked like an idiot against Jan Blachowicz and injured himself was his footing is bad. You know, I think he recognized that it was a technical flaw that is what ended up fucking him up. Also, a lot of the time, if someone injures their leg, they come back, you know, having worked on their feet a lot. He seemed well schooled on positioning and like correct mechanics to have your feet during combinations and all that, which he had not previously shown.
In a way that I did not expect from Alexander Rakic. And as you said, I was the most impressed I've ever been by him in a fight where he got fucking smoked.
Yeah, so fight before this, Aljamain Sterling easily beat Calvin Kattar. I've got not a lot to say about it, but it's a weird fight where Aljamain Sterling did impress me, but I also was so thoroughly unimpressed with Kattar that it like balances it out to where I think it was just a weird... I think that Aljamain Sterling looked kind of bad, but he won because Calvin Kattar looked just terrible.
Well, I think Aljamain Sterling, in classic Aljamain Sterling fashion, looked kind of bad, but yet you still kind of can't help but be impressed by his strategic execution. Like, he won the fight exactly how he needed to win it, and we didn't think he was going to. We also didn't think that Calvin Kattar was going to look as fucking shot as he did.
He looked 36 as shit.
He really did, but particularly for a guy who has always been... a plodding slow starter who can be made to wait his turn. We've also I've never seen him against a wrestler this good.
Or someone that's as insistent about it.
Aljo did not look Yeah, Aljo didn't look small at all. He looked wide as fuck.
That's something interesting is I think I'm just going to start assuming if someone goes up a weight class, they're going to win. Because almost every time they look the exact same size and they look as strong or stronger. And then they look just much faster and powerful than the guy. Like everyone at a lower weight class is a bad matchup for the guys right above them, even if they're a better fighter, arguably, or like have a bad matchup against them. You know, because
he certainly looked faster in comparison to Calvin Kattar,
or like ragged. They should get Aljamain Sterling, Josh Emmett, because then we'll really see if he's able to grapple 145ers.
Oh, that's a mean one. Wouldn't mind
it's a mean
that.
One. If he wins that, give him a title shot.
Sorry, if Luev, Arnold Allen, this puts him in position to get some pretty good fights at 145. Wasn't a great fight, but still a reasonably impressive performance, and he hit a tombstone pile driver on Calvin Kattar. Even Calvin Kattar was laughing about that.
Yeah, it looked like he was going for the tombstone pile driver, like reverse, but it ended up in a Batista bomb. Because, you know, the tombstone pile driver, normally you got your opponent at 69 position, but he had him like ass to mouth. And then he it looked like he wanted to Batista bomb him, but it was like, hey, I'll just get him on the ground. And fucking Kattar, there's a little like picture of him smiling during it because he's like, oh my God, I'm getting fucking Batista bombed. This is so stupid.
So yeah, Kayla Harrison easily beat Holly Holm, just looked twice the size of her and threw her around and submitted her easily. Holly Holm looked 43 as fuck.
Yeah, she looked like Holly Holm at 43.
Looked like Holly Holm with no outfighting or counterpunching ability against someone who dramatically outstrengthed her in the clinch and had avenues to win the fight off of that. 135 is open season, and this, you know, I mean, Kayla Harrison might just get a title shot off of this and would probably beat Raquel Pennington, so good for her.
Yeah, or might get a raspy by Raquel Pennington. We'll talk about it when it happens, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, she also might just get boxed the fuck up.
Yeah, because that's the big thing about Kayla Harrison. She honestly didn't even look very good to me. She just looked so much better than Holly Holm, and I believe Kayla Harrison's an elite women's bantamweight fight. Like, definitely. She's probably the best fighter there, but I just didn't think it was very, like, compelling performance. It was what I expected, for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Diego Lopez fucking just wiped out Sadiq Youssef.
This is what we were saying.
Yeah, even though I picked Sadiq Youssef just on an experience thing, and I'm like, this is exactly the kind of matchup where Diego could just get fraud checked. I also did float the possibility that Sadiq Youssef is really susceptible to just go up and kill the guy strats. Yeah, Diego Lopez just was punching into the clinch, and Sadiq Youssef would welcome those clinch exchanges and then get hit in the body and then recoil back and then dinged in the chin real hard with an uppercut. And he just got knocked the fuck out. Yeah, Diego Lopez. I don't know. Are there guys saying he's going to be champion? Because, like, I'm
probably
no reason to expect that from what I've seen. But guy continues to be must-see TV. I can't wait to see who they match him up with next.
I don't know. I think he's the new Korean Zombie because he's just a really violent guy that knows where he's going to get the win normally. It was also, the fight was a bit of an example of experience is experience wherever you are, because Diego Lopez has almost double the amount of fights that Sadiq Youssef has, just not in the UFC. So I get it, because I was also thinking Sadiq, you know, in theory is a more experienced and cultured fighter than Diego Lopez, but fucking Diego Lopez knows his game a lot better than Sadiq Youssef does. I think Sadiq is still trying to figure himself out in a way that every fighter with 17 fights still is, but Diego Lopez feels like he's had... he's had 30 fights, you know? He's
probably has significantly less octagon time than
Or like about the same with almost double the amount of fights, you know? It's he's a fighter that definitely understands what his A game is a lot better than Sadiq Youssef, and I've seen people saying, like, you know, oh, this is an easy fight for Sadiq, you know, if you're picking Diego Lopez, you don't know shit. I just don't trust Sadiq ever, because he's a guy that doesn't know what he wants to do. And Diego Lopez, he knows what he wants to do. He's like, I'm going to come up and I'm going to surprise you with how fast and powerful I am. And when I hurt you, I can submit you or knock you out.
He knows what he wants to do, and what he wants to do is violence.
Yeah, and he'll come at you really fast. I think Diego Lopez has the potential to establish himself as one of the fastest starters ever, because so far he's off to a good fucking start. He's got crazy good instinct in the first Like, he's got really good feel. He doesn't seem like he's susceptible to being caught cold, really. Like, I'm sure it can happen. You know, it can happen to anyone. But he just comes out ready. And that's an important fucking thing for fighters to have. Especially at 145, where so many fighters are, you know, really good over the stretch. But if you take a lot away from them early, you can build up a lead. You know, like, Diego Lopez versus Josh Emmett, another one. You know, Josh Emmett is just who I like to see people fight if I want to know if they're going to be good. Because if you do well against him, I think you're going to be good. If you crush him, I think you're going to be really good.
And if you get wiped out by Josh Emmett, you might still be okay.
You might still be okay, but you should probably fight down for like three fights.
Oh, speaking of which, they should do Diego Lopez versus Bryce Mitchell.
That makes sense. That is so cruel to both guys, honestly, because I think if Mitchell wins, it'll make Diego Lopez stock gone completely. And if Diego Lopez wins, I think he'll make Bryce Mitchell a poster of how unconscious you can be.
I mean, not that he hasn't already been.
That's true. That's true.
So, Jalen Turner absolutely fucking fumbled the bag against Money Moicano.
Yeah, Moicano fucking picked up the money bag and then beat him to death with it. He's like, you fucking idiot. You fucking dumbass. You fucking idiot.
Beat his ass with a fucking little sack with a dollar sign on it.
Yeah. And then he talked about Austrian politics or Australian politics, whatever the fuck.
Yeah, whatever the fuck. Just you really shouldn't try to one-shot walk-off KO Renato Moicano, because that never happens to him. Because Moicano, he's got a bit of a Frankie Edgar thing going on where he doesn't have the best chin you've ever seen, but he's got great recovery and he's a fucking dog. It just, when he gets finished, it's because he fights fucking murderers who, if they get a good moment on you, they're going to fucking polish you off.
It was also, I think, a really fucking stupid idea for Turner, because people are saying he was doing it because he wanted the $300,000 bonus, but you know that Max Holloway, Justin Gaethje, Alex Pereira, Yuri Prochazka, Charles Oliveira are all fighting on the same fucking card as you, and you try to get a walk-off knockout as the best knockout of the night? You fucking idiot. Like, because I think that maybe played a part, but I think it was really just bad fight instinct where he thought it would be cool to do it, so he didn't even take into account the bonus.
Yeah, I think he just thought that Moicano was cooked, and it looked like it.
I mean, everyone else Turner's hit with that hard of a shot is cooked.
But yeah, also because Turner normally fucking actually follows up and has good finishing instincts, whereas he
thinks he's a knockout artist, but he's not. He's a finisher.
Yeah, exactly. And he let Moicano get back into the fight. And as we said, Moicano, he might not be as consistent of a wrestling threat as someone like Mateusz Gamrot, but he's way more consistently dangerous once he gets a good position on you and can just like hold that and actually get good damage off.
He goes for the same shit every time, whereas I feel like an issue Gamrot has is he'll fuck around and like see what's working. He'll try different spots. Moicano's like, nope, the back is my position. I'll take side control for a bit or half guard if you give it to me, but I'm getting your back, motherfucker.
And it was one of those things where Turner was so conscious about not giving his back
that he got
Moicano could
mount.
Just keep top half and mount easily because Turner couldn't roll to make a scramble to get out of it, because he knew if he did, he was just getting rear naked choke city.
Yeah, I think we need to stop expecting more from Turner just because he has so much potential, and remember, he's 14-8. Yeah, he is inconsistent as fuck. And in all, honestly, a bit of a head case in some regards, because like the walk away after the Moicano fight just showed really bad fight sense. Like he does not know game as much as he thinks he does. Which is not something you like to see from a fighter that fights like a bit of a young veteran. You know, if you're a young veteran, you better fucking know ball. Or you're gonna end up with these type of situations. You can't just be a guy that knows he hits hard and then doesn't pursue the thing he's the most talented at, which is sequencing. He's a really good swarmer when he's hurt you. His sequencing is amazing. He has fantastic shot selection against someone that is heavily concussed and going to give more obvious reactions. They're not going to be thinking, oh, I need to zig right here because he's zagging. They're thinking, ah, I'm dying. You know, it's pretty easy to go kill someone that's hurt that bad. And if he had tried that on Moicano, instead of giving Moicano like 5 seconds to recover before he tried to finish him, he probably could have gotten enough damage off to either end the fight before the bell ends or hurt Moicano so badly that he goes into the next round at a deficit. But instead,
I think he could have finished Moicano if he'd followed up on that left hand.
I 100% agree. But even if he didn't, he still would have set himself up better, you know?
If he'd have just gotten like stacked next to Moicano and gone for some clean downward straights, he could have cooked it that.
Or even just stayed on him and let him stand up and just knocked him out without trying to get the ref to stop him and then giving up bad position to let Moicano stall a little bit. It was a horrible green decision by a guy that is not green enough to be making those decisions. You're 14-8 and you have had like half your fights in the UFC. You should be more mature than that.
Hey, but still badass comeback for Money Moicano. You got to love it.
Yeah, Moicano did absolutely nothing wrong in the fight. He comfortably knew the matchup and he did not fight so worried at all. Moicano is a case for why you should never fight like your opponent has power. Because even if they do, what are they going to do? Knock you out? Fucking idiot? No, just sub them. Or ground and pound them, whatever. Like take away their power after a certain point. Jessica Andrade fought Maria Rodriguez, and it was pretty good. It just a little tepid compared to every other fight on the card because it was like a decision that went to a split, and Marina Rodriguez looked fine but made a lot of really bad decisions and also just ended up getting put on the fence for a long period of time and has no tools to circle out at all once she's there.
Yeah, I really think it would have served Marina Rodriguez well to pursue the clinch more in this fight, because this was the thing, is she was having a very floaty 1-2 spamming performance, which is like a good play against Jessica Andrade. It's just the fact that Marina Rodriguez is not consistent enough with her footing to maintain good positions to get counters off. And she starts too slowly, and Jessica Andrade will capitalize on any moment where she gets someone to the fence. And Rodriguez just, I think she just felt how strong Andrade was in the clinch and was just like, oh, I don't really want any of that, even though Rodriguez pretty good in the clinch and particularly has good double collar tie knees, which have been a problem for Jessica Andrade in the past.
Yeah, I tend to think a worry for her was just that Andrade is so strong that she's actually able to break the clinch with takedowns, or is like able to take her down without giving up her hips. She can just like pick her up from a body lock or something.
Yeah, so this is a performance where Marina Rodriguez had to consistently maintain a safe striking distance was just not a particularly sustainable performance for that, even though she still went to a split decision and then the fight was like, okay, she had plenty of success. It just like the directionality of the fight really did not favor her. Bobby Green and Jim Miller had a fucking banger.
Yeah, Bobby Green's chin is gone enough to where he can get hurt by Jim Miller pretty reliably, but still have enough in the tank to where that only makes Jim Miller get beaten up more. Because Miller would hurt him really bad, and then Bobby Green would be like, oh, let me land 75 punches on him because he hit me.
Yeah, and Miller was just not able to sustain any success that he had in this matchup, because he just has to work way too hard to get Bobby Green into a position where he can land good shots on him. And Jim Miller really does not like having to consistently close distance on people.
And Jim Miller hates when he needs to go first to win at all. Like, if he needs to go first, he's just going to keep ending up in bad positions where he's getting out beaten or out.
He's too stationary and plodding and stumpy and just like doesn't really have the gas tank to repeatedly commit to those forward blitzes where he would like be able to show something and then chase Bobby Green back and catch him with a good left hand as Bobby Green would just like turn away and put his feet together on an exit. And the more Jim Miller just like stayed in place, the more Bobby Green was just able to tee off on him with whatever he wanted. And he beating Jim Miller's ass by the end of this fight. It was a great fight. Jim, no one will remember that it happened.
Jim Miller kind of has like a... He had a problem where Bobby Green is accurate enough of a straight hitter to where if you enter in a way that isn't kind of sneaky, you're basically just entering with your hands down, asking him to jab you. So anytime Jim Miller would like try and show a kind of shitty feint to enter, Bobby Green's like, I'll just punch you anyways. I was going to punch you even if you threw it. So like, fuck your feint. I don't give a shit. I was fucking hit. You didn't even throw a punch. I don't even have to wait for the counter. I'll just fucking punch you anyways. It was like just a tailor-made match for Bobby Green. And he really made sure it was fun too, because he gave Miller a lot of opportunities to get into the fight.
And we expected Bobby Green to win it. We didn't expect him to whoop Jim Miller's ass like this and get 2-10-8.
And almost knock him out at the end of the fight, too. They could have stopped it at the end of the third. They just didn't.
Oh, but, certainly.
Which I respect. Jim Miller made it.
Davison Figueiredo rear naked choked Cody Garbrandt. I guess Cody Garbrandt kind of got Kelvin Gastelum checked in this fight.
Yeah, he got his prospect sub loss after he became like pretty shot. You know, he was champion like 6 or 7 years ago, and he just now got his submission prospect loss. So now he's going to come back better than ever and know how to defend takedowns and you know, not have any problems in the feet.
Well, I mean, he's always been an incredible defensive wrestler and scrambler in that classic Team Alpha Male mold. Just no one's ever actually just like locked down clean control positions on him before.
And this is the first guy that even really tried. Also, I don't know how much to make of it, but Cody Garbrandt seems a little too dumb to lie. He was saying he had experienced like severe vertigo during the fight, and it kind of made it to where he had no equilibrium to defend the takedown. So like he was like, yeah, he pretty much just had to touch me and I fell over because the vertigo got so bad. Which, not a thing you want to hear from a guy that's been knocked out like 11 fucking times. It is a little telling that maybe you should stop fighting if you're getting vertigo in the middle of fights where you aren't even hit that hard.
I did think it was funny as fuck that Cody Garbrandt tried to set up a like somersault kick off of doing a dragon sweep,
mm-hmm.
doing high low setups with kicks where your hand has to touch the ground. It was just fun. And then he gets kicked in the face going for a cartwheel kick, because that'll happen if someone just like throws a low kick at the same time that you go for that shit, particularly if you're in the closed stance. Like, Sanchai always sets that shit up from southpaw. But watch your Sanchai, dude.
The stance matchup is a really important aspect of that strike that people don't think of, because they think, oh, it's just a meme move. I'm going to throw it, and if I knock him out, I knock him out, whatever. But you can set it up in... like, you set it up, like, it fucking works. It's kind of shitty in MMA if you're, like, if you're just a striker, because in kickboxing, it'll pause the round because you got to stand up, but... I don't know. A really bad performance by Cody Garbrandt, where he still somehow made it to a second round and didn't get knocked out. So that's, as far as I'm concerned, Cody looked fine.
And landed a really crisp 2-3 on Fig just before he gets taken down and finished.
Yep, Figueiredo looked slow to me. I think if he was prime, he would have just knocked out Garbrandt, but because he's a little older, he had to, you know, just do a thing that makes sense if you don't think about it. Because, like... if you don't think about it, it's like, oh yeah, I'll just take him down and then submit him. Fun. But, you know, in practice, you'll probably be a lot more careful about it because he's so hard to take down, you can't rely on it. But it worked, so.
So that was every fight. Awesome card that we've had great fun talking about over the last couple of weeks. Only makes it all the more depressing that next week we've got to talk about this Mateusz Nicolau versus Alex Perez card, which is an okay fight.
Just such a drop, comparatively.
Yeah, well, and just the rest of this card is looking kind of... Oh, shit, no, we got Tim Means versus Uros Medic.
Okay, that's actually sick. That's a mirror match. And Hani Yahya versus Victor Henry is fucking... That's something.
Okay, we got some sleepers on this card, apparently. We'll catch you next week and maybe talk about it. Peace.
Later.